Hello and welcome to this special edition of the IWA podcast series with me, Sarah Reid, today. I'm joined by Maeve de Largy, current chair of the Women's Lawyers Association, and Ivana Bacik, senator, lecturer, all-round agitator, who is soon to be awarded the accolade of 2019 Woman of the Year. Congratulations and welcome.
Thank you for joining us today.
Maeve, I might start with you. Why Ivana for this award?
Well, actually, we went out to our members at last year's gala dinner and asked for suggestions of who we might give the award to this year. And Ivana was a name that came up again and again. She was also, you know, the people on committee were very behind Ivana getting this award, in particular people like Maura Butler, who's been involved in the IWLA for so many years and just knows the work that Ivana has put into this organisation, as well as so many others. So we made that decision and instantly were so happy we did so, because the reaction that we got was amazing on Twitter. You know, everybody just so behind this and really kind of saying long overdue and, you know, so well deserved for so many reasons. Everyone, I think, you know, has a connection into Ivana or her work, you know, that she's really been involved in so many areas that are important to women in law. So it just has made so much sense, and we're really glad we've done it. And it really... similar to Justice Mary Ellen Ring last year, you know, this award is not about thank you now that you're stepping down, you know, and just, you know, thanks for all your work and you've done enough now. It's really just thanking people and you know, acknowledging all the work that they've done in their career and saying and more, some more please would be great. So keep going, and we're all behind you. So it made sense in that context as well.
And I think that's interesting that from the members quite organically, and as you said, saying so long overdue, finally got there, that this, as much as it's the 2019 award, it feels like, and you sort of said it there, that it's almost recognition of kind of a lifetime achievement kind of award in a wider sense. And so Ivana, can I ask you, as I would see it, this is an award that recognises the work, I suppose, done not only for women, but on behalf of women who didn't have a voice or didn't have a platform. So is there anything in particular that stands out which you feel especially proud of?
Well, that's a difficult question, but thanks, Sarah. And just to say, I'm really humbled and honoured by the award. I'm just thrilled to get it. And it's lovely to hear Maeve say why, because obviously, you know, you don't know for sure. Mm. But I was really, really flattered and delighted. And I must say, I've been so happy to see the Irish Women Lawyers Association going from strength to strength. I've been a regular attender at the wonderful dinners, always great fun too, may I add, every year. And there's been some great recipients, really worthy recipients over the years. I mean, Mary Ellen Ring last year, Nolene Blackwell in previous years, you know, just wonderful women who've done so much for women, not just in law, but in society. I suppose, you know, this year, I'm really, as I say, really honoured to get the award this year. This is a very special year for me. It's actually 30 years, almost to the day that we were taken to court, that I was standing before the High Court as a student, as a 21-year-old student, faced with prison for giving information on abortion to women in crisis pregnancy. I'd been a newly elected student union officer, president of Trinity Students' Union in 1989, and SPUC, the Society for the Protection of the Unborn Child, the entity had already threatened legal action against others, had started legal proceedings previously, and then targeted us, the four Trinity Student Union officers, because we were giving information on abortion to women in crisis pregnancy through our guidebooks. And many listeners won't know, or happily will be unaware, that at that point, in a very, very shameful part of Irish history for women, women couldn't even access phone numbers of clinics in Britain at that point in the 80s, because the clinics had to close down their services. Students' unions were the only places in Ireland openly offering phone numbers. I'm still so proud of that work we did. But I'll never forget when I was first elected, the reality hitting us that we had every single day in our student union office in Front Square in Trinity, we had women calling into us, women ringing us, women in tears, women writing, women in absolute crisis from all over the country, all age, you know, from young to older, all seeking this information, and so many who were desperate and didn't have anywhere else to turn. So I'm very proud that we stood up against the law, against SPUC, and that we handed out that information. We were taken to court. We were threatened with prison because we were in contempt of court for providing information in breach of a court in interim injunction. Mary Robinson acted for us. She told us to pack our toothbrushes that we'd be going to prison. At the last minute, a change of judge and the brilliant legal argument by Mary Robinson kept us out of prison. And the case then wound on for a further 6 or 7 years, in the course of which we were declared bankrupt because the costs were awarded against us. So it's a really poignant anniversary for me, this 30th year. And of course, it's particularly poignant because at last we have succeeded. And that's, in a roundabout way, Sarah, in answer to your question, that's the thing I'm proudest of, because that after 30 years, in fact, it was 29 years, of course, last year, that we finally legalised abortion in Ireland through repeal of the Eighth Amendment. And throughout that time, I suppose I've been involved in that campaign over many years, in the 90s and early noughties, when it had really slipped off the political agenda, when there were very few of us, a handful of us from that those student days who kept going with the campaign, who set up numerous pro-choice groupings over the years, who tried to keep the issue alive, who fought against, for example, the hideous 2002 referendum, which would have rolled back the X case, who fought to keep the tragic cases of women like Savita Halappanavar, like the X case, like the PP case, all of these cases in the public domain, and who finally sought come to a public vote last year, where we saw 66.4% historic result, where the people voted to legalise abortion. And I was very proud to be on the national steering group for Together for Yes, the campaigning coalition that ran the Yes campaign that was so successful. But, you know, it was really the stories of the many women, and you talked about women who didn't have voices, the stories of the 100,000 women in Ireland who've had abortion in the years since 83, since the referendum was originally passed to make lives of women and unborn equal. Those 100,000 women, I feel, finally we have been vindicated in that historic vote, and I'm really proud of the role I've played in the pro-choice campaign in Ireland. And it's really this year, you know, just historic, because so many of us who'd been involved in 89, the four of us who were taken to prison, who were taken to court and threatened with prison, for all of us this is a really historic anniversary. So it's lovely to be getting this award 30 years on, and thank you very much to Eula.
And what a fantastic legacy. And I hadn't really appreciated the confluence of the two things in this year. What an amazing thing, and one I would absolutely say you should be proud of. So that's a very good example of it. Vanna, you wear quite a few hats. So you have Vanna, the Reid Professor of Criminal Law in Trinity. There's a Vanna, the Senator and Legislator. There's a Vanna, the Feminist Agitator, is a phrase I kind of keep going
I
back
love that
to. Vanna, the Barrister. Which of these best defines you, do you think?
Well, I mean, all of us wear multiple hats. Women, of course, are renowned for our multitasking skills. And I should say I'm also a mother to two daughters, which is hugely important part of my life.
And you know, that's interesting. I was going to write in Ivana the Mother. And then I kind of, it's this funny thing that I thought, is that worth even talking? Like, are we at such a point where it's immensely important and all of that in real terms? But is it almost the undo, women's place being in the home and all of this? I kind of thought, I'm not even going to put that because that's not something. But then I tossed and turned back into it this morning. I kind of thought, will I put it on the list or not? Does it maybe seek to undermine? This is another thing that I am, but it's not on the list. So that's interesting that you would rate that just as important as the rest.
Yes, but I agree with you. I think there's a reason why interviewers may well be hesitant, for very good reason, to ask women, because for so long it's been the defining feature for women.
I wouldn't
women.
Ask a man it. So
precisely,
why,
yeah. Precisely. So I appreciate that you didn't. but I felt my daughter's probably kill me if I but it is a double bind for us as women, you know. In politics it's a particular double bind, and I think we have to be careful in politics not to bring our families as well into the public domain in the same way. It's not fair on them. And yet, you know, when I became a mother, I became even more pro-choice, because it was so, it struck me as so, it's such a thing to go through a pregnancy for any woman, to impose that upon a woman against her will, to insist that she continues a pregnancy where she doesn't want to be pregnant. That to me is such a denial of women's rights. And I think for many women, it is barbaric. And for many women, it's at the point where you experience a wanted pregnancy where you really appreciate the full import, perhaps, of being pro-choice. And that's so for me, it really consolidated my views in that way. And of course, as well, it meant, you know, that for me, you know, I'd grown up, all my reproductive years had been spent under the shadow and the chill of the Eighth Amendment. I certainly don't want my daughters growing up under it, and I'm so happy they won't now.
That's it. I didn't become a fully fledged feminist. Not, I thought I was, but I didn't until I had a daughter. I had a son, and I was still had a daughter, and I went, no, this changes here and now. And it is that kind of, and maybe that's, I suppose, in terms of your role as lecturer, I'm so interested by the next generation of lawyers you see coming through as well, and what for them the legal and social landscape will and should be so different from for them. So can I take you back, and you have a fantastic photo here with you today, but can I take you back? You were one of the founding members of the association over 20 years ago now. What was the need? So in the group of women that stood there, first you mentioned sort of in maybe rooms that were free around Trinity, whose kitchen table was it around? Like where did this start, and what was the need to start it?
Well, the origins of the Women's Lawyers Association, as you say, lay over 20 years ago. We, a group of us had been talking for some time about the need to form a network for women barristers and solicitors, women in professional practice, women academics, women lawyers in the civil service. So to form a network, because we were so underrepresented. And we could see that at the senior levels in the profession. We could see that among the judiciary. And there was a real consciousness about that. Myself and the very sadly now deceased Twinkle Egan, who I really miss. Twinkle was a barrister in practice. She was a brilliant character, a really, really great mentor to many, many younger women coming up through the bar, as I was then. And she really was one of the main instigators. And she and myself and a group of other women, including, again, the sadly no longer with us, Judge Miriam Reynolds, who was a senior counsel then, and other women like Pauline Wally, Grainne McMorrow, Aoife Goodman, Patricia McNamara, all of us joined together and started to talk about forming a network. At the time, I had also got Department of Justice funding with colleagues Catherine Costello and Eileen Drew in Trinity to do a major survey of women in the legal profession in Ireland. We published that in 2003 as Gender Injustice, pun on the words. It was the first and still the only major qualitative survey of women and men in the legal profession to establish what barriers and obstacles lay in the way of women's career progression. And the recommendations we made, I'm happy to say, are still sort of permeating through. And I know EULA is doing an update with Irene Lynn in Cork. So there's a lot of work being done. But as part of the work on promoting women and promoting women's career progression, we formed this network of Irish women lawyers. We did indeed meet around a kitchen table. It was the table, in fact, in the law school in Trinity. Because wearing my, at the time I was in practice as a barrister, I was also a lecturer, as I still am, in Trinity. And the Trinity Law School kindly made available our rooms, and we used to meet in there in the early days of EULA. I remember drawing up our constitution around that table. We had a beautiful meeting, a beautiful invitation, and that's the photo you refer to, Sarah, an invitation from then President Mary McAleese to come into the Auris and to meet with her. And I have a wonderful photo of the founding members of EULA, as I say, including Miriam Reynolds and Twinkle Egan, no longer with us, all of us standing with Mary McAleese in her lovely drawing room in the Auris. And that for us was a really important moment because it marked a real official recognition of EULA. We also ran an enormous conference, and again, that was really Twinkle initiation in Dublin Castle. I know Maeve will have the arc, I hope, has many photos and so on, because among our speakers were Helena Kennedy, now Baroness and QC, incredible promoter of women in law in England, and of course Cherie Booth, then married to, well, still is, but at the time her husband was Prime Minister of England. And Cherie made a wonderful speech opening the conference, where she spoke, where she said she had just woken up that morning. And her husband, she said, and she said to the conference, I woke up this morning, I said to my husband, I'm going to Dublin today, Tony. And he said, who's minding the baby, Cherie? Because Leo was their little baby at the time. And she said, you are, dear. And you can imagine the fantastic response that got in the room full of women lawyers, all of, many of whom were seeking to juggle family and work and make a work-life balance for themselves. So that was a great conference. And that really was again, one of the founding moments of EULA. And we then put up posters around the law library, put up notices through the Law Society Gazette, we were really keen to encourage younger women to come forward. My experience as a lecturer, all of us seeing younger women coming in, we were really keen to do that. In those early days, our posters in the law library were graffitied and defaced by our lovely male colleagues.
I didn't know
that. A small proportion of them. There was a bit of a backlash because men were saying, well, why can't we come to your meetings and so on? I'm happy to say, though, that the majority of our male colleagues were supportive. And it actually did, I think, really help to highlight the issues facing women at the time. I mean, I remember being pregnant in practice and being advised by women, my peers, saying, you know, don't let anyone know you're pregnant. Hide it as long as you can. Solicitors won't like it. And it was such an awful feeling of, really, do I really have to do this? And of course, I was fortunate that I was lecturing. I wasn't, you know, full time all the time in practice, but I could see the, you know, this culture. Things have changed dramatically, and Eula played a major role in that. And I'll never forget the first time I was in court when somebody else, a young male devil, stood up and said to the judge, I can't take that date for my master because she will be on maternity leave. And it was an amazing moment where, what? We no longer have to hide the fact that we're pregnant at the bar. So I think, you know, Eula has continued to play an enormously important role. It's wonderful for me as somebody who's now in her 50s, seeing someone like Maeve coming in as the chair of Eula, you know, seeing a much younger generation of women coming forward, young women solicitors, young women barristers, really asserting themselves and continuing the strength of the network. So it's been hugely important. And I love the Eula activities, yoga, inspirational talks, motivational networking. But the primary purpose of Eula always was to ensure there's a network of women and a support base for women starting out in practice, because it's still, we're still seeing obstacles and barriers. I was happy just this week to launch with Judge Mary Finlay Gagan a Trinity Women in Law initiative run by our Law Soc, Millie Farrell Kelly, wonderful fourth year student who's initiated it with her colleagues. And we spoke with the students about the barriers they may face, but needing to overcome them. But we're really heartened by the huge support and the huge enthusiasm among young women. And that's, I think, the real strength of Eula.
I think I absolutely agree. And I'm such a strong believer in this idea that you can't become what you can't see. And to me, that's one of the biggest pieces here, that there has been the visibility, I say, putting it out into the ether and saying we're doing this. And it doesn't, in one sense, it doesn't even matter if it's yoga or talks or whatever. It's that it is a forum, it's a network, it's a support structure saying it's here. And I suppose maybe I'd say, why do you think it's still important then to have, if we are, and I know we're not there yet, but if we're doing a slow march towards parity, equality amongst male and female lawyers, why is something like this association's forum still important to have?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, maybe the premise there is, are we okay with the slow march?
Yes. You know?
Or do we want to move things a bit quicker? Because, you know, it seems like the same problems are still there of, you know, it was looking ahead and saying there aren't enough women in senior positions in the profession. And that's still the case because, yes, it's all progressing. But if we're gender parity on entry level, you know, things we haven't achieved the goal until it's a gender parity at the thing. And it's not about numbers, it's about choices and it's about different voices at the table and making sure that with all the new kind of issues that society is facing these days, one of which is climate change and an urgent one, we need different voices, a different way of doing things. And what's missing at the table right now, among lots of other things, but what's very obviously missing is women at the table. And let's get them there and then see what they can bring and see that different approach. And, you know, we're talking here about our kind of journey into feminism and what clicked for us and, you know, maybe shifting of views. For me, for a long time, I was kind of thinking, you know, men and women are exactly the same and they can do exactly the same job. And, you know, I can do anything that a man can do. And now I'm more in the camp of there are differences and we celebrate those differences and value those differences. And those differences get the same respect. So it's about saying women will have a different approach. You know, we're talking generally, but, you know, they will to problems, and let's get that approach brought in and valued at the table. So
I think you're absolutely right. And building on that, it's the sense, I'm sure you're aware of that fantastic project, the Northern Irish Feminist Legal Judgments book. I just found that so interesting. Just the idea of teasing things out and that idea that let's look at something. So the project, for anyone who was unaware of it, was a reworking or reimagining of core legal decisions through just a feminist lens. And I remember in I think a book review of it, Judge Donnelly said the whole project starts on the premise that not all women judges are feminists and not all feminist judges are women, because that's it. Mm-hmm. It's like feminism, it's a broad church, and it's whatever you bring to it. And we all have, I think, evolved our own thinking of it and evolved what a women's network can and should be. On one hand, it's about, you know, when you get in the door, holding it open for the next person coming after you, maybe that's it. Mm-hmm. But then we had maybe senior women and senior legal practitioners who would have come through in the 60s and 70s, who they may not have been really described as feminists, yet they were, because they were forging a career. So the sense of visibility of I can go through the door, they haven't necessarily held it open, but I can even go through the door because somebody went there first. So are those issues and the challenges that you saw for legal women 20 years ago, do you think they're still the same, or have we moved on to just new and different challenges then? And I'll ask maybe you both that, because from two kind of different sides, perspectives.
Yeah, like, I suppose in some ways they are the same, because, you know, the numbers just aren't there. There's still, you know, there's people coming in and not reaching the top of the profession. So we need to explore why that is the case. Mm. You know, if IWLA has been around for over 20 years, if that conversation started 20 years ago very actively, if a lot of organisations and law firms and the Bar Council are behind gender equality and have been for quite a number of years, why are we still where we're at? And it seems that a different approach is needed. Maybe, you know, treating this as a women's issue, and let's put in this program for women and help them to join in with what's already happening, and, you know, kind of, yeah, give them the skills to be able to fully participate and everything. You know, maybe that's all just the wrong way of thinking about it. And so while the problem is still the same, we need to look at how we're addressing it. And that's where we keep the discussion on the table, and by having groups like IWLA, you know, as you said, every event may not be serious, and I think women need to allow themselves to have fun and go do yoga and watch a film, and, you know, we don't always have to be talking about the issue, you know, how do we solve it? But it's about coming together and keeping the discussion on the table, keeping IWLA out there, seeing the posters around, and that will keep people thinking, how do we solve this?
And it will build the new girl, the old boys club, the new girls club. Similarly, I think in a women's forum like this, and there will be lots of women who you don't like or get on with, but that is the nature of life. But it's the wealth of just knowing, as I say, these are my people, and what can I get kind of from them in all senses of professional and personal. How do I, as you're saying, during pregnancy, how do I manage this? How do I manage the narrative of my pregnancy? Like, for God's sake. But if that's a conversation you have to have, then at least I can have it with somebody who understands this bizarre little kind of space that we have to work in. I wanted to ask you both as well, where would you like to see, and I suppose maybe you've kind of touched on it there, or I was going to say, where would you like to see the association be in 20 years' time? And where would you like to see, or who would you like to see getting the award in 2039?
Well, actually, I'd love to hear from you, Van, on that, because it's so important to us. You know, we're kind of working away and your head's down and you're, you know, putting on these events. And it's so interesting to hear, like, what the founder members think. Are we doing the right thing? Are you proud of us? Are you proud of where the organisation is? And are
very
we going
proud
in the right?
Very proud. I think I speak for all the founder members.
You know, is there...
But where would you like to see it then in 20 years' time? Having got from there to here, what other areas, without a comment on the current procedure or the current kind of committee, but where do you see there's space still to grow, do you think?
Well, I think, yes, first of all, we are very proud. I think all the founder members are very proud of what EULA has become, the strength with which it's grown, the fact that so many younger women are involved. Every year when I go to the dinners, I'm just blown away by the numbers of young women there and their confidence, and, you know, the fact that they're very happy to be part of a women-only network. 20 years ago, I wouldn't have assumed that, because there was such a backlash against feminism. Mm. And I'm really heartened by how many of my students identify as feminist, way more than identified as feminist in the 80s when I was a student, and how many young women practitioners identify as feminist. I think that's really important. I'm also really heartened by all the young men who support their sisters and friends. I mean, during the referendum campaign, I was running canvassing across large parts of Dublin Bay South, and we had large numbers of young men in particular who were coming out canvassing for reproductive rights for their women friends and relatives. So that was really heartening. And I think in 20 years' time, What I hope we'll see is a continuation of the parallel campaign to ensure that men are stepping up to the plate within the private sphere and in the home. And to me, that's really the unfinished bit. I mean, Maeve talks about, rightly, about the need to have other ways of campaigning. So I think actually we predicted this in our recommendations. We talk not only about the things we can do within the legal profession, like expanding full maternity pay to solicitors and so on, but also about the need to change social attitudes so that men take more of a role in child rearing and child care generally, and caring responsibilities. So I see our introduction of paternity leave as an important step in the right direction, but I think a lot more needs to be done. We've seen recent campaigns from male-dominated trade unions, but very positive ones, about a four-day week, for example, mm-hmm. to move towards greater recognition of work-life balance for women and men. So I think that's a huge part of it, that we need to push men to take on campaigning roles mm-hmm. too. You know, the four C's in literature are what hold women back across different careers. That is lack of cash. So we're trying to tackle that through gender pay gap legislation I'm championing through the Oireachtas to ensure that we have new ways of tackling really ongoing problems where women are earning less than men across mm-hmm. every sphere. That's cash. Second one is confidence, and that a lot of that's about bringing up our children as feminists, both boys and girls, so girls have more confidence. The old boys' culture, that EULA is a really important part of tackling, to try and ensure that women have strong networks, that women are bringing each other up through career progression and so on. And then childcare, which is the fourth C, in which we need to tackle on a societal level. So those are the C's that need to be addressed. EULA and feminists must address them, must continue to address them, but also we need our male allies and friends and supporters to work and address them too.
The sense to me of why the association is so important is there is a voice here and a platform to constantly remind we can do better and we deserve it, but we owe it to the next generation as well to keep making sure we do better and holding ourselves to that very high standards. They were the main kind of talking points that I kind of wanted.
I never answered your question about who do we want to see getting the award in 20 years' time.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like it to be a woman Taoiseach, but I'd like her not to be the first woman Taoiseach, because I think we can't wait 20 years for a woman Taoiseach. I'm hopeful she'll be maybe the second or third woman Taoiseach in 20 years.
Was it 2014 that I think for a period of 2 if not 3 years we had a Minister for Justice, Frances Fitzgerald, we had the AG and Susan Dent and the Chief Justice, so we've been there, we
Chief
had this
State
beautiful
Solicitor.
Yes
mm-hmm. yeah DPP every, yes that's yeah. right, there was a confluence a yeah. fabulous confluence for a while
that's
where
it.
Everyone every high judicial office, every high legal office mm, in the state, shall we say, was held by a woman. It didn't last, sadly.
It didn't last, but as you said, we got it there once. Now it's about revisiting it. Mm. Yeah, so maybe we'll have a woman Taoiseach to round. If we could get the full hand, that would be fantastic in 2039 to have every seat in the House. And what about you, Maeve? Who would you like to see getting?
Yeah, I also kind of was thinking, you know, of who it should be in 20 years and kind of saying, God, that's a long time to wait for some of these things. But I guess there's loads that it could be, you know, it could be, you know, as I've already said, you know, we're not giving this award to people who are retiring or finished their career, but maybe it would be somebody younger starting out in their career who has already made a big impact in law. Perhaps it could be a woman of colour. Mm. It would be very novel to have an awardee who isn't white, you know, that would be a big step for us. It could be a trans woman. Mm. It could be a man, as we discussed, who has stood out for his championing of women lawyers and laws affecting women in Ireland. Perhaps someone who's taken a case, you know, that has really changed the legal landscape. A traveller woman, an asylum seeker, somebody who wasn't born in Ireland. You know, our society is changing. I think it's 17% from the census now are people not born in Ireland. And so let's reflect that. You know, the legal profession maybe is a step behind there in kind of making sure that where the lawyers are representing the clients, you know, and representing society. So let's make sure that people from every socioeconomic background can get into law, that it's a pathway that's available to them. And I know there are programs in the universities available for that, and in the Law Society and Bar Council, the Denham Foundation, and there's various ways in for people, but let's encourage that. And again, it's back to if you can't see it, so we need people to take that step and then be visible and put them forward and show that if people want to achieve that and have a career in law, that it can be done. So
it's viable and it's real.
Yeah.
Excellent. Here. Well, thank you very much, as I say, to both Maeve de Dargy, current chair of the IWRA, and Ivana Bacik, former founder member and 2019's recipient of the Woman of the Year Award. We look forward to seeing you on the 19th of October. Thank you very much.
Thanks.